O Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. Well, many of us have eaten our way through Thanksgiving, and here we are, filled with anticipation of celebrating the impossible possibility of the birth of one who is fully God, yet fully human. But before that happens, we have to consider the impossible possibility of a world order that is fully sovereign and yet fully servant. It's fully of this world, but fully of the world to come. It's fully accomplished, and yet it's fully not yet accomplished. Powerful, yet non-coercive. Judging and merciful. And blessed be the preacher who's able to stand fully in the tension of all this and not try to resolve it. There are some things about this little interchange between Pilate and Jesus that I think it's interesting to consider some of the historical background of what was going on in this. We tend to romanticize much of this, but I prefer to see the humanity in it. At the time of Jesus, there was a huge distinction between southern Judeans and northern Galileans. You see, it's crucial to remember that the word translated in English, the Jews, should be better translated, the Judeans. The Judeans. Well, the southern Judeans kind of look down on the northern Galileans. After all, the capital city was in Judea, Jerusalem. After all, the temple was there where they thought God's seat was. Everything was in Jerusalem. So the Judeans kind of looked at the Galileans as sort of uncultured hillbillies. And the second thing we need to think about is in the Judean elite had also been co-opted by the Roman Empire, and they had become Roman puppets. Collectors of Roman taxes, responsible for ensuring civil order. And the third thing is that complicates when you read the story of Jesus' arrest and trial and execution, as that while the Galileans and Judeans referred to themselves as Israel, Rome referred to all of them as Judeans. In fact, that's the origin of our current use of that designation, the Jews. Judean. And so, as we look at this story, the tension is not between Jesus and the Jews. The tension is between Jesus, the Galilean hillbilly, who came proclaiming God's kingdom on this earth, a kingdom of nonviolent justice, between he and the Judean snobbish elites who were also collaborators with the Roman Empire. And in the context of this passage, we read the Jews. We should read it as the Judean elites, which were the priests and the scribes and the Pharisees, who were collaborators with Rome. And like collaborators everywhere, they were caught in the web of conflicted values, because they were concerned with survival. They were concerned that their lives and their privileges depend on being good little puppets. Maintaining civil order was important, which was borne out 30 years later when there was not civil obedience, but there were rebellious people, and the Romans wiped them out and destroyed the temple. So they had good reason to be afraid. Well, the historical background is what shapes the exchange between Jesus and Pilate. Pilate, you see, is the highest ranking representative of Roman Jerusalem. And he invites Jesus into his headquarters, which keeps the Judean elite outside the door. And we have this little exchange between Jesus and Pilate. And Pilate's questions are not the questions of a man seeking personal enlightenment or of a modern-day trial judge seeking to determine the facts of the case, because Jesus was already judged guilty. Pilate was trying to figure out what is the appropriate punishment. And Pilate says, "Are you the king of the Judeans?" A hostile question, because it's meant to have Jesus plead guilty, the charge, and establish what sort of punishment he was going to have to do. And it also, it insults the Judeans, because Pilate is calling Jesus the king of the Judeans, all of them, and he's a Galilean hillbilly. And so they would take offense at all that. Well, a funny thing happens at this point. Jesus answers the question with a question. Doesn't seem really out of style, does it? But it is, because a person of lower status would never answer a question with a question to a person of upper status. And so Jesus is saying to Pilate, "I don't really look on you as superior." And he says, "Have you not been following my career yourself? Do you not know what's going on?" Probably not. He's probably more interested in his survival, Pilate, I'm talking about. And so Pilate's reply would be heard as a loss of honor, because he appears to accept, okay, we're equals. And he answers the question, "Am I a Judean? I don't think so," he would say. And then he comes to Jesus with the question, "Well, what have you done? Why are you here? What's gotten you into this predicament?" And having bested Pilate in their exchange of the first couple of verses, Jesus responds to the question. And notice that Jesus doesn't deny being a king. And today is Christ the King Sunday, and we've sung Lord of Lords, crown him with many crowns. But Jesus said, he doesn't deny he's a king. He says, "My kingdom is not of this world. It's otherworldly." And Pilate is still looking for a guilty plea. And as evidence that Jesus says, "My kingdom is otherworldly," he says, "If I were king of this world, then my followers would behave like followers of the kings of the world. They would fight for me, but they don't do that." And by the way, that all changed with Constantine. The fighting. And so Jesus says, "You say I'm a king." And depending on where your loyalties lie, Jesus' response can be heard either as an acclamation by Pilate that Rome was looking on him as a king or potential, or it was a guilty plea of a dangerous upstart from Galilee, and he needed to be done away with. Jesus was probably aware of both these things going on. And then he says, "Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." We belong to the truth, don't we? We listen to the voice of Jesus, don't we? Notice again that John has repeated the emphasis on truth. He does it 14 times in his gospel. And it's not simply an idea that John agrees with. John sees the truth as a relationship that one belongs to. You see, we belong to and abide with Jesus just as Jesus belongs to and abides in us. And he with God and God with him. And with everything that God represents. Truth, light, life, abundant life, love for the world. And the final verse that I want to call your attention to is not there in today's lesson. It should be, because I think it's the very heart of the matter. Between this interchange between Jesus and Pilate, because Pilate says, well, what is truth? That's a question many of us ask ourselves over and over through our lifetime. What is truth? Where do we look for truth? As I said on the onset, the text today calls us to live in the midst of an impossible possibility, hearing and belonging to one not of this world, but born into this world out of love for us, so that truth and light and love might abide in the world and might shine through you and me. And as followers of Christ, we're called today to live out our lives in the truth. And the truth is found in the words that Jesus said, in the life that he lived. Paul Tillich said, the truth is not found in the words that Jesus spoke as much as it's found in the life he lived. And we're called to live our lives in this truth, loving God and loving each other with all our hearts, our minds, our souls, our entire being. And the rest of the truth is, Jesus said, it's not going to be easy, but I will be with you till the ends of the earth. I'll be with you till you and I are dead. And that's the truth. Amen.